Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started. All right, today my guest is Steve Way. Steve is an actor, a comedian, a writer, and a speaker. He was born with Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy and is an advocate for disability awareness. Steve performs stand-up comedy and motivational speeches around the country and can be seen on the Hulu show that you may have well seen called Rami. Steve, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, man. Thank you, Mindy. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, I have like 1,000 questions for you, so I'm going to dive right in. Do you mind first telling us just a little bit more about your diagnosis and maybe when you were diagnosed and how it really impacts your daily life?
Yeah, I think it was pretty obvious when I was born that something was wrong. I came out backwards, upside down, and with my feet wrapped around my head.
Ooh.
I've never been so flexible in my life. I kind of missed that flexibility. But when I was 4, I was diagnosed with congenital muscular dystrophy, just because I was the only person in my family to ever have it.
Uh-huh.
So really, anyone with an early 90s medical textbook, you know, kind of told you that. I didn't find out I have Ulrich until I was 25.
Really?
Yeah. And I really owe a lot of that to a very good friend of mine, Dr. Muhammad Abood, who I went to high school with, and now he's an ER doctor at Hackensack Hospital. I mean, he's got a lab in Georgia that was doing DNA sequencing for people with neuromuscular diseases who did not have a definitive diagnosis. And it's crazy how all my life I went from muscle biopsies and blood tests to just spitting in a tube. And that's how I found out.
Wow.
And it was heavy, you know, because I wanted to know for so long. And I felt like it was such a missing piece to my identity. And once I figured it out, I felt like I could finally put that puzzle all together.
Yeah. You know, I know so many different conditions in sort of the muscular dystrophy, the neuromuscular disease family can take a really long time to properly diagnose. And I can't imagine how frustrating that would be. And it's interesting to hear you talk about it in terms of just really having kind of a missing piece of your identity.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you're in this community and you see subsets within that community of the different types, and you see people sharing information,
mm-hmm.
sharing tips, advice. And I always felt like an outlier, you know, because I couldn't fit into one of those smaller communities. It's been life-changing. You know, I've met so many people who have, like, the same little day-to-day problems that I have. You know, and I always thought, oh, I'm just a little more messed up than I thought I was. but no, it's like when something with Ulrich is that your skin is also affected by it. So, for example, if I get a cut, it takes a really long time to heal. And I never knew why until I found out I have Ulrich. And it opened up so many more doors, and it answered so many questions that I've been asking for, the first 25 years of my life.
Sure. Was it really about having a name for it, or did it affect, once you finally got that definitive answer, did it affect how you went about your daily life, what you talked to the doctors about, what the doctors were able to do for you in terms of, how you approached your condition?
Well, it was definitely both. When it comes to my doctors, like I said, it answered a lot of questions. So it really helped when we were trying to find treatments for certain things, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed my doctors to do more specific research for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the name definitely helped. It definitely gave me some peace of mind. It helped to have a label.
Yeah.
I felt like I could kind of breathe easier with it. Mm-hmm. Just for my own comfort. Whether that's rational or not, I don't know.
Sounds perfectly rational to me.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, I guess when you see other people who have that specific name, there's a part of you that gets a little jealous.
Yeah.
And I feel like once I had mine, I felt like, okay, now, I'm part of a community now.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are a lot of things that I want to talk to you about. You've got a fascinating career. But before we leave this subject, what would you say? Like I said, there are so many people in this community who spend years, just like you did, trying to find the ultimate diagnosis. What would you say to other people who might be listening who are on that journey right now and are frustrated and haven't quite gotten there yet? What would you say to them?
Either Google it or message me on Instagram and I'll help you.
Oh, that's so nice.
Like I said, one of my very good friends helped me figure it out. So I would love to pay that forward for someone else.
I love that.
Yeah. It's the answers are out there. The tools are out there. We've come a very long way from muscle biopsies.
Yeah.
Like I said, you just spit in a tube.
It's true. I was diagnosed back in the day. I'm not going to tell you how long ago, Steve, but it was a minute ago. And I was diagnosed with a muscle biopsy, which I know is not really the standard anymore. And it's amazing to me how far medicine has come and diagnostic tools. So that's a really generous offer. We're, of course, going to put your information in the show notes so that people can reach out to you on social media. But let's talk about your career a little bit. When you were younger, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Or did you always know that you wanted to be a comedian, an actor, and all of these different things that you are today?
So this might be a bit of a whimsy answer. When I was a kid, I honestly wanted to be like an astronomer.
Really?
Yeah. Growing up, I used to watch reruns of Star Trek with my parents.
Nice.
And Star Trek, specifically The Next Generation, made me realize that, just because you're disabled doesn't mean you're not important.
Yeah.
It was the first time I saw a disabled character on television with LeVar Burton's Geordi LaForge.
Really?
Yeah. I remember, just being like 4 years old, sitting on the floor in my living room and watching this show And my parents explained to me that, yeah, he's disabled like me, but he's important. You know, he has a title, he has a job to do, and he does it very well. And just because I'm like him and I'm different from other people around me, it doesn't mean that, you know, I can't be important as well. And what my parents got me a telescope when I was a kid. And, you know, I'd go out in the backyard and just look up at the stars, the moon, the planet, whatever. And honestly, it's something I do almost every night. I might get a little, I guess, philosophical and rambling here.
No.
But I've always found a lot of comfort looking up at the stars.
Yeah.
Especially like the last, I'd say, 2 years after COVID, you know, after my lockdown that year. I like to look up and find the North Star because I feel like it's always guiding me. You know, I feel like the North Star is always there. And it's always something I can look up to. And almost like ask for guidance, ask for advice. You know, it gives me this feeling of safety, knowing it's there. And I look up and I see and I feel this starlight, you know, shining down on me. It makes me feel like I have a purpose in this world. You know, and I hope everyone else can feel that way. You know, because the stars are always there for us. And I feel so blessed to just still be here. You know, I could just go outside and look up. And there's this marvel all around us. I'm sure I can think of 17 different reasons why I love to do that. But yeah, there's just something comforting of having that guiding light in my life. Wow. You know, something that's always there to guide me. Yeah.
That's amazing. I don't think I'm ever going to look at the night sky the same way again. I know. I've got goosebumps, and that was such a beautiful answer. And seriously, I'm going to go outside and look at the sky tonight and think of you. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, I recommend everyone do that.
Definitely.
Even if you're not able to go outside, just look at your window.
Yeah.
You know, it's special. Yeah, to really answer your question, I never really thought that I could have a comedy career. Yeah, I've always used comedy growing up as like a coping mechanism for my disability. I started doing stand-up with my real-life best friend, Ram Youssef, when I was 19. He really helped me get into it. But to me, it was just a hobby. And the reason for that was because when I was 14, I had scoliosis surgery. And it almost killed me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I was within 5 minutes of my heart stopping.
Wow. I had scoliosis surgery when I was 14 also, and it was not my favorite experience. I'm so sorry to hear it was traumatic.
It's all right. Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
But I stopped breathing for 2 minutes about a month and a half after the surgery. It gave me pneumonia really bad in my right lung.
Oh my gosh.
And as soon as that happened, my doctors told me that if I got sick again, you know, that's going to be it. I'm not going to survive it. They said I probably wasn't going to make it out of high school. So I thought, all right, what's the point? You know, if my death is always around the corner, why am I going to start something I can't finish? So when I started stand-up comedy, I thought, okay, this is a it's fun. It's fun. But it's kind of like a means to an end. You know, I'm going to use this to pass my time. And then when I was 25, when I did get that official diagnosis, my doctors were like, oh, no, Steve, you're good. Like, you're healthy. You know, you're going to live a long time. And I was just like, oh, no. I was kind of, I never wanted to die. But I was ready for it. I had to constantly prepare myself for it. So to be told in an instant that that wasn't true, my entire life changed. And I'm still deprogramming myself to not have that constant belief that my death is right around the corner. But because of being told that for 11 years, I held myself back. You know, I never took stand-up seriously. I never thought I could take it to a level where I'm at today. But I am very thankful for the opportunities that I have right now. And I am taking it to a level I never thought would happen in my wildest dreams.
Mm. I love that. You are soulful, my friend. Like,
I got more.
Oh my gosh.
What you answer it, yeah.
This is you're absolutely amazing. I love the way that your brain thinks, and you know, I love the gratitude that I'm hearing from you just for what you're doing and what you have today. Can I ask, how did your parents or the adults in your life influence you so that you could pursue your dreams?
I mean, going back to what I said about Star Trek, you know, they just always tell me that I'm important. You know, just because I can't do the same thing as, you know, my classmates could, it didn't make me any less of a person.
Yeah.
They were my biggest advocates. They fought for everything I needed. And they helped me understand that just because I needed an accommodation in school, it didn't give me an advantage. You know, it didn't make me better or smarter than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It just put me on the same playing field. It put me at the same level. So I was then able to use my talent, my intelligence, whatever, to the absolute best of my abilities without having to compromise them because of my disability.
Yeah.
And they really helped me to advocate for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was in college, whether it's finding my health insurance, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they really, really set me up to fight for myself.
That's so great.
And yeah, and it's probably one of my best assets that I have.
Nice. Are your parents funny, or where did your sense of humor come from?
I'd like to claim that one all on my own.
Yeah?
So let's just say I was inherently bored with it.
Okay. That definitely, I could see that. So why do you think humor and laughter are so important in life?
I mean, it's the truth. You know, real comedy, real humor, there is the truth.
Oof.
And when I first started doing comedy for the first time, an interviewer asked Rami if he thought my comedy was sad. And Rami said, no, it's not sad at all. It's the truth. And if the truth is sad, well, oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
That's life. But it's real.
Yeah.
And there's something about being on a stage and using the absurdity of my reality to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, educate people about what I go through as a disabled person.
Yeah.
There's something real unique with that. I'm not on stage telling the story on every single disabled person in the world. I'm telling my story on that day.
Yeah.
And that's because I cannot, in good faith, tell anyone else's story.
Yeah.
That's not up to me.
Mm-hmm.
All I can do is tell my own story.
Yeah. Well, and that's what makes it authentic, too. You know, I think, tell me if you agree with this, but I feel like finding humor in our situations, and all of us have things in our life that are hard, but I think if you can find the humor in them, do you feel like it almost takes some of the power away from those harder things?
Honestly, I think it's the opposite.
Yeah?
I think it might give it more power, only because it brings attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that allows me to really take more control.
Oh, nice.
I almost feel like I have to give up power in order to take it back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to take a step back and I have to really see the reality of what's going on.
Yeah.
I'll give you a little story. During the pandemic in 2020, I took my Medicaid provider, Horizon NJ Health, to court because they kept denying me more at-home care hours. So I took them to court, and even with a judge and a doctor I've seen for over 20 years, a judge ruled against me. Because she said that I'm not disabled enough.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, that's kind of hilarious. Right? Like, if you look at me, you're like, oh, he's going to die, like, tomorrow.
Oh.
So it's like, what more do I have to do, you know, to be more disabled? And when you point out the absolute absurdity of it all.
Yeah.
That is like, okay, this is what we're dealing with.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is the system that so many of us are up against.
Yeah.
And this is what we have to navigate just to literally survive.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's stupid.
It is stupid. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. But I think once you're able to kind of find the levity in all of it.
Yeah.
You know, you can exhale a bit and then be like, all right, now it's time to fight.
It's true. It's true. So is there any part of your comedy that is intended to try to help people understand or become more comfortable with disability? Or is your goal really just to make people laugh?
I think it's to educate. To educate and make people laugh.
Yeah.
It's not my job to make people comfortable.
Yeah.
I can't decide that for my audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're uncomfortable, there's nothing I can do about that.
True.
But they can also come out of it learning something that they never knew before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whether it's how Medicaid works.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's what I do on a daily basis. My school,
mm-hmm.
whatever, adulthood, getting a job, dating, relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think at the end of the day, people will hear my set and they'll think, oh, he's not that different from me.
Yeah.
He has the same problems I do.
Mm-hmm.
Right, relationships. Making money.
Yeah.
Moving out. I just do it differently.
Yeah.
Right? That doesn't really make me different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we all do things differently.
So well said.
Yeah. I'm just giving them a different perspective from someone who on the outside looks very different.
Yeah. Interesting. So how then did you get your start? I know you've mentioned the first time that you got up on a stage and you were with a friend and to do stand-up comedy. What was that like? Was that really your start in the entertainment world, or how did you get your start?
I think I really got my start when I was about 9 years old.
Did you?
Yeah, I did a lot of speaking with the NBA.
Yeah?
I was New Jersey's general ambassador 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I traveled all over, spoke all over. So getting up on a stage felt very natural to me.
Yeah.
And like I said before, I've always used comedy throughout my life to kind of cope with having dystrophy. And Rami helped me just combine the two. And then I eventually transformed that into acting.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I've been doing this for, you know, more than two-thirds of my life.
That's so great. That's great. I actually also started, I do motivational speaking as well. And I was the Texas and then the Florida State ambassador when I was a kid. I actually gave my first speech when I was four. I think it was a terrible speech. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, I definitely caught the speaking bug early.
But you did it. That's all that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved it. And you know, and I think that I learned really on, I'm sure you learned the same thing, just the power of sharing our stories. And I think, you know, so many of us keep so many things private because that's maybe what we think that we're supposed to do. But I think there's so much power in sharing our stories with each other. So do you mind telling me a little bit more about your, and first of all, do you, are all things created equal for you, or do you consider yourself an actor first, a comedian first, a speaker, an advocate, or are they all just equal parts of you?
Wow, that's really tough.
Is it?
I definitely focus on one over the others, you know, at any given time. But I'm also ready for any of them at any given time.
Love it.
You know, like right now, I'm really focusing on doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because, you know, I'm a TV writer. All the TV writers are on strike right now.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing a lot of writing like that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of my screenplay writing. It's hard to get acting jobs right now because, you know, we want to stand in solidarity.
Yeah.
With the WGA, the Writers Guild of America.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, at the end of June, it's very possible that the acting union, that Screen Actors Guild, is going on strike as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It's a lot. It's a lot. But right now, I'm focusing on stand-up, but if someone emailed me right now and said, Steve, we need you for a speaking engagement tomorrow, I'm so ready.
Yeah.
You know, that's not something I really had to plan for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was preparing for an acting role and someone said, hey, Steve, I have a 10-minute stand-up set open tomorrow night. Do you want it? Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I definitely want to focus on the individual parts.
Uh-huh.
But I'm ready at any given notice for, you know, any of it.
That's fantastic. So tell me, if you don't mind, or talk a little bit more about your motivational speaking. What is the message or the messages that you are using that particular platform to communicate? What do you like to speak about?
It's kind of like taking the whole inspiration trope.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of twisting it around. But, you know, I don't mind when people say, like, hey, Steve, you really inspired me to get up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when I hear someone say that, it's very rewarding because I feel like I'm able to get people to overcome their fears.
Yeah.
Something I like to say a lot is fear is the mind killer. You know, fear is very destructive.
It is.
So if I'm going to help someone overcome their fear just by doing what I love, yeah, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
And I want the listener to know that's very different from someone saying, like, oh, I never saw a disabled comedian before. That's so inspiring. Like, no, not really. You know, yeah. Like we all know what that means, and I get it. You know, I'm not going to shame someone
right.
having that belief. It's fine.
Sure.
You know, they said they never saw a disabled comedian like me. They probably never even heard someone that looks like me speak before. And that's not their fault, you know? It just happens. It's fine. But when there are people within the disabled community who say, Stephen, you inspired me to write something. You know, you inspired me to start a blog, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, that's awesome. That's awesome.
I couldn't agree with that more. And thank you for putting it into perspective that way, because you're right. It's two very different things. And I love that. And in fact, you talked about, you know, bravery and all of that. And one of my favorite things to say is that it's okay to be afraid as long as it doesn't keep you from being brave.
Yeah. I mean, like we're all afraid about something.
Uh-huh.
I just tell people, don't let it consume you.
Yeah.
And don't let it stop you from living your life.
Yeah.
You know, fear, all this all back. I've been there.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been there. But I, you know, being 32, you know, I'm now more than half my life past when I almost died.
Yeah.
So it's like, why live in fear? You know, life is short.
Yeah.
It really is. The days might feel long.
Mm-hmm.
The weeks might feel long, but life is so, so short.
It is. And any given day to look back on your life and how far you've come, all of us, I think you can really see how short it is and how quick it goes by.
And living with regrets can be a very debilitating feeling.
So true.
You know, I'm lucky to say I maybe have 3 regrets throughout my entire life.
Mm.
But honestly, 3 feels like 3 too much.
Yeah.
You know, and I just tell people, like, if you want to do something, just do it. Just handle it.
Yeah.
You know, if it doesn't work out, fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Fine. So now you know what to do next time.
It's true. 100%. So I want to ask you kind of a serious question here. You know, we hear a lot about like representation and entertainment and all of that. Have you personally found the entertainment world to be inclusive, or have you experienced more barriers, or have you experienced more inclusion, or is that even a fair question?
No, it's absolutely fair. I would say the industry as a whole, you know, overall is very exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
There are a ton of barriers.
Yes.
But within the individual communities I've met and I'm now thankful to be a part of, it's very, very inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Rami wrote my part for his show, the first thing the producers and the execs said was, great, who's going to play Steve? And Rami said, well, Steven's going to play Steve.
Yeah.
and they were like, well, we don't know about that. So I had to audition for my own role.
Nice.
I've had agents, executives, or whatever, asked me if I ever thought of having someone else play me in my own show. And we know what that means, someone who is not disabled.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, TV execs tell me that the idea for my show might make people uncomfortable because it's not 100% optimism. And I'm like, well, that's not my life.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to compromise my life just because of this hypothetical feeling you have about an audience.
Well, and honestly, I can think of at least a half a dozen shows right now that are not 100% about optimism.
No, of course not. And that's not the point of television.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, television is supposed to be real. It's supposed to bring you into a world that you're not accustomed to.
Yeah.
You know, that's why my favorite show on TV right now is Succession.
I love that show. Yes.
Oh my goodness, it's brilliant. You know, I know a lot of people who work on that show. And I'm so lucky to, you know, have seen the behind the scenes a bit. Mm-hmm. But it's a world that, you know, the average person doesn't live in.
Mm-hmm.
And the characters are absolutely just abominable people.
Oh, they're terrible people, yes.
Right, right. And you're not supposed to root for them.
Uh-huh.
But we get sucked into their world.
100%.
Because it's so different.
Yeah.
And I get it, you know?
Yeah.
That's my world.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But these people are so afraid that because I look different, that audiences will be turned off. And I don't buy that for a second.
No.
But what do I know?
Well, I think you know a lot is the answer to that question. But I'm curious, what's the response been to Rami? What do people come up and say to you?
They tell me they love my work.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah, they tell me that I'm their favorite character.
Uh-huh.
Which, I am. I'm the best.
You are the best.
Best character in the whole show. Yep.
That's awesome.
I've had so many people in the disabled community almost thank me for telling our stories on TV.
Yeah.
In a way that's never been done before.
Uh-huh.
There's an episode in season 2, I won't get into it, because it's a little inappropriate, but...
So we all need to go watch it if we haven't already.
Season 2, episode 7. Okay. It's titled Atlantic City. But it's about a topic that disabled people are told that we can't talk about. And yet it's something that's very, very real.
Yeah.
And it's something that affects a lot of us. And it's something that we deserve to talk about and deserve to happen to us because everyone else is allowed to.
Yeah.
Right? But it's expected for us to not do it. And it's not fair at all.
Mm-hmm.
So Rami and I were like, really? We're going to make an entire episode about it. And I had so many people message me and be like, Steve, you made me comfortable to finally discuss this and to seek out the help that I need for this specific problem.
Wow.
And that is probably top 3 most rewarding feelings I've ever had in my entire life.
I have goosebumps right now.
It's so wild.
Yeah.
That I have this opportunity and platform to tell those stories. And again, I'm telling my story.
Yeah.
Right. At the end of the day, I'm me. I'm Steve Way. I'm a street white guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like to be a woman and disabled, gay and disabled, Black, trans, Asian,
yeah,
Indigenous and disabled.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell the stories that I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That those people deserve to have their stories told too. Mm-hmm. My dream is to have a platform big enough to where I can open those doors so they can tell their stories by themselves.
Well, I feel like that day is coming. I really do. I would give you that platform.
It's soon.
Yeah.
We're definitely a lot closer than we've ever been.
Yeah.
I figured as much.
Am I correct that you were on, you were a part of the Real Abilities Film Festival? Is that right?
Yeah. Just a month ago.
Yeah. Tell me about that. That the more that I hear about the Real Abilities Festival, I want to go one of these days because it sounds absolutely magnificent. And it's such, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like the polar opposite of what I feel like Hollywood is. And the platform that it's giving to people and the awareness that it's bringing to our community. Tell me about it and what it was like to be involved.
It's absolutely fantastic. And I had the opportunity to speak on two different panels.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just so privileged to be asked to do that. Shout out to Isaac for...
Yeah.
Organizing this whole thing.
I know.
It's truly wonderful. And I don't know how the man does it. There's no way he sleeps when it's going on.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful institution because it finally allows us to showcase how good we are.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I thought about in one of the panels was that the biggest hurdle disabled people face in entertainment is that we're just never given a chance
mm-hmm.
to just show how good we are.
Yeah.
All we want is just the chance.
Yes.
That's it. That's not a lot to ask for.
I know. And right. I know so many talented people. And it makes me yep. crazy that so many of them, so many times, don't get the opportunity, just like what you're saying.
Yeah, that is unfortunate because we are good enough, if not better. A lot of the performers or writers out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's sad. I mean, I always go back to the Academy Awards in 2021. When they made such a big deal about having a ramp. And the way that I saw it was they just admitted to breaking federal law for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
By not having an inflatable stage. And that was the year Trip Camp was nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace,
a good documentary.
Yeah, rest in peace, Judy Heumann.
Right.
That's an absolute pioneer. And we lost to an octopus. And if that doesn't tell you how the industry feels about us, I don't know what does.
Yeah.
You remember the years leading up to that, they kept having so many discussions about equity, inclusion, diversity. And they put out, a statement talking about how they're going to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And they listed every minority group except for disabled people.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, what should we do?
Uh-huh.
Right? They literally forget about us.
Yeah.
They won't even give us a seat at the table. And I'm like, no problem. I'll bring my own seat.
There you go.
Yeah, that's fine. But this is what we're up against.
Yeah.
we're up against an entire industry that either sees us as props or just doesn't see us at all.
Yeah.
And at that point, again, it's like, what do you do?
And well, do you feel like it's changing? Do you, are you sort of being in this industry and working on the projects that you're working on? Do you feel like we're making progress? And
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the fact that we're talking about it tells me we're making progress. You know, there's massive change happening. It's way too slow.
Yeah.
It's way too slow. But no, it's happening. It's absolutely happening. That just the fact that I'm on three seasons on this Golden Globe winning Emmy nominated show.
Yeah.
Is insane. You know? Yeah. The fact that I'm, you know, prepping to do my hour stand-up special for HBO.
Oh.
It's, yeah, it's wild. What?
Oh my gosh, when is that happening?
Whenever the writer's strike is over.
Okay, okay. I was about to say you may not be allowed to tell me yet, but
No, honestly, I can't say because I don't know.
Okay. Well, let us know.
Yeah, of course.
And we will get the word out.
Absolutely.
That is so exciting. Oh my gosh. I love it. I love it. So gosh, I could talk to you all day, and I'm sorry to say that we're running out of time, but tell me, so you mentioned the HBO thing. What else is coming up next for you? I know that we've talked a little bit about the writer's strikes and some of the roadblocks that your industry is facing right now, but what's in the works?
I definitely have a couple things up my sleeve I can't talk about just yet.
Okay, that's fair.
But the biggest thing after my setup special is trying to sell the show that I developed about my life.
Yeah.
I have the brilliant Judd Apatow helping me out with that.
Oh my gosh, that's huge.
Yeah, he's producing my show. He's an absolute wonderful, magnificent person.
Wow.
Who's given me so much guidance in just the last, 2 years. But
wow.
Yeah, you know, we tried before. We got close. It didn't work out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But, we're gonna pick up where we left off, and we're going to find someone who believes in us.
I love that.
And, yeah, and someone who really sees our vision and understands that audiences will resonate with it and understand it.
Well, I can't wait for it. I will be first in line to watch that show because that sounds absolutely amazing. I'm so happy for you. I love any chance I get to talk to someone who not only has the amount of success that you've experienced, but is such a nice person. You're so much fun to talk to, and you're so down to earth. I love your honesty. And so just having you here today was such a treat.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate that. And thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Oh, gosh. Absolutely.
Thank you for giving me the platform.
My pleasure.
I hope we can do this again sometime when, you know, after things happen, when I have more updates. And just talk about how, you know, the whole community is evolving.
I would love that. You name the date and the spot is yours. So I would love it if you would just like to, you know, close us out with, you know, if there's anybody listening who may have a dream, you know, and we've talked a little bit about this, but I just want to leave it kind of on this note, you know, anyone who's listening that has a dream that, you know, maybe feels too big for them or that they're a little bit afraid to pursue. What would your closing thoughts to them be?
Just do it. Yeah, it's probably intimidating or daunting, but so is getting out of bed in the morning. You know, we don't know what the day has in store for us. And that we only have one life, and it can radically change in an instant. Yeah, anyone could get hit by a bus tomorrow, but it's different for us when we can get a cold, and that can put us on a ventilator for the rest of our life.
Yeah.
You know, our reality is much different. And I don't mean to say that to scare people, but...
No.
It's just that... I don't know. Every day is a gift. And I think a lot of us, including myself, sometimes get caught up in how crazy this hell world is that we live in. And
yeah,
we lose sight of how beautiful everything really is. And, you know, something I like to ask someone very close to me every night is, what's something that made you happy today?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is. Even if it's just like, you had to really get a cup of coffee, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Or it's seeing the stars, right?
That's right. That's right. It's just to remind you that there are good things out there in this scary world.
Yeah.
You know, that there is happiness out there, mm-hmm. no matter how small it might be. And I think once you do that, the world seems a little less scary.
Yeah.
A little less intimidated. And I think it gives you just a little more confidence mm-hmm. to go out there and accomplish whatever it is you want to do. And again, if you fail, who cares?
Exactly.
You know, we all fail, right? No one's perfect. There's no such thing as perfect. And failure is good because it allows us to learn from our mistakes. And it gives us the opportunity to try again. And of course, it's easier said than done. But again, once you take a step back to see the big picture, I don't know. I feel like not much really matters.
Yeah.
And it's really up to us to, you know, create our own happiness, right? Because no one's really going to do it for us. At the end of the day, we just have ourselves. So.
So true.
Make and yourself your best friend.
And so, yeah, and some of my best stories have come from my failures. So that's so well said. Again, I just really want to thank you for being here, and I am going to hold you to it. You're going to have to come back and talk about more progress and your upcoming projects.
I'm down. Thank you so
much. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Solidarity forever.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content, and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.